and one had to logic to it of the next step. I never really liked the virtual that much.
I did a couple of benchmarks just to say I did.
I think I did too.
Or travel bugs or geocoins. Geocoins are nice to look at. People put a lot of time in it, but I've been through the coin collecting phase. I don't need another expensive hobby.
I usually would just pick them up and move them on to another cache. How many caches does whoever has the most these days have?
Team Alamo has more than 25,000.
Wow.
CC Cooper Agency, he's close to that.
There's too many other things to do. Yeah, K-Team was the first to find one of my caches, and it was in Denver. Again, that was before they didn't really like you doing vacation caches. I would get back there quite often on trips so I could check on it. But yeah, it was a magnetic cache kind of near the REI store. And there was this zigzaggy bike path that went down to the river, and it had a fence along the entire thing. The fence rail was kind of like this, so you could fit it up underneath. I hide a cache in Denver, and the first person that finds it is from St. Louis. That was Confluence cache. It was a small one, and I had someone log it. In their log, they said they put a deck of cards in it. And I started looking into this, and I finally figured out that this guy thought he had found my cache, but he actually found another cache in Seattle. It was called Confluence something.
Oh, he mixed them up.
He found the right one that he was looking for in Seattle, but when he tried to log on, he logged mine. I sent him an email, and eventually I had to delete his log, and I documented the whole thing for him and showed him which cache he should be logging. I'm not sure he ever got it. Yeah. He just kept insisting he found my cache, and it wasn't in Denver.
Bush had a trilogy. He had Wildcat Mountain.
That's what I'm thinking of.
No, Tell's Tollgate.
Remember that trilogy? That was good.
We did that as a group, I remember. We were supposed to follow the saddle, which was the valley where you can easily get to Wildcat Mountain. When we got there, the cache had been chewed up by animals.
So it had been when I was here.
I brought a new container out with me. Unfortunately, we also brought out some Rice Krispie treats, and our hands were all full of it. So when we put the cache away, we had Rice Krispie treats.
So it probably got chewed right back up.
Yes.
Yeah, I know when I went out there, I seem to remember that being the case.
That should have been an animal box in that particular area. And Wildcat Mountain, from there, you could view the reservoir, the one that broke and flooded the shut-ins area. So I remember sitting there like, what's that? Oh, that's that reservoir with the pumped water up on top.
There's a few down there in Antarctica. Whether it's going to be anywhere near where we get off, probably not. But just in case, I might take a look.
You say the mountain you're going to climb is on the border?
Of Chile and Argentina, but it's on the Argentina side near Mendoza.
Was Lake Titicaca in that range?
That's up
too?
In Peru. Been there climbing. We took a boat out to this island out there that was kind of hilly, and we're doing some just trading hikes. We'd all just float down there, and we're 14,000 feet already. Kind of getting a little active acclimatization before we head up to the higher mountains. My brothers do a video log each night in the tent. We've got almost 3 weeks up there. It gets long sometimes, especially when the weather's bad.
At some point, I guess you reach a zen moment. You decompress so much that you forget about the hectic day-in, day-out rat race.
Well, that'll be the nice way for that whole time. Away from a computer. I won't hear anything about United Airlines.
No checking emails.
Nowhere to check email. I'll just come home, and who knows what'll have changed by then. And then you get back, and you're ready to get back into it again. Yeah, it's too bad I can't put a virtual cache up there. That might be unfound for a long time.
Well, take the coordinates anyway, because if they suddenly allow it, you go ahead and...
If I think of it, the brain kind of forgets things like that sometimes. I may be just ready to come back down, because you're pretty trashed. Get a few pictures, get back down lower where you can breathe.
But when you get to the top, you spend a few quality moments there, don't you?
Yeah. Denali, we spent way too long. We were up there 45 minutes. I was ready to go down. You have to travel rope the whole way from the time you leave where they drop you off there, because it's just full of crevasses. And you're just hoping, everywhere you step isn't going to just drop out, because, when it snows and blows, it just kind of creates this bridge over it, and you can't even see the crevasse.
Is it harder to go down than it is up?
It's easier physically. You may be more likely to get an altitude headache on the way down, because you're not breathing as deeply. Unless you're consciously thinking about it, forcing it. When you're going up, you're breathing really hard. Harder than you can imagine. We were up over 19
A lot of the time I was breathing two incredibly forceful breaths. There's where you kind of get in a zen. I'm just watching the rope in front of me. When it moves, I move. When it moves, I move. And in between, I'm just breathing as hard as I can. But most of the accidents happen on the descent, or at least the majority. Now, there's kind of a mental letdown after you hit the summit if you're not careful.
A few years ago, I started flying gliders. We've got a Claudie and a Super Cub that'll tow us up to altitude, then we release and look for lift. Those good days with all those puffy clouds look like it's maybe got a thunderstorm. Get some really good lift. Yeah, you can stay up for hours. It's pretty other than the air noise going by the canopy. I mean, it's quiet enough that you can hear the train blow its whistle that goes by underneath. You know, there's some people that actually go on cross-country flights. I mean, you know, on a good day where there's a lot of lift. Let's talk about GPS setups. You know, a lot of them have the suction cup on the window and the GPS and the PDA and tracking their course, and they review it at the end, look at all the stats, and quite too much work for me. I just like to go up and fly around a bit. I usually stay within 10 or 15 miles and try to make sure I get back to the field.
This concludes the Slaga Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.